Thank you. To start with the teen court program, what I've learned, bless you, is there's two specific aspects to any given teen court program. Can you hear me? Is this working?
Yes.
Okay. Because I couldn't tell if I'm getting feedback or not. There's two specific aspects. And most often, people focus on the defendants or the offenders in the program, which is great. That works fine. That's primarily why we're here. But there's another key component to every teen court program, and that's your volunteers. So I put a challenge to my volunteers. I always challenge my volunteers, and I told them I'm going to be involved in these type trainings. I'm going to be speaking to people who have teen courts, don't have teen courts, don't like teenagers. Maybe they do like teenagers. You never know. And so I threw the task to them, and I said, what would you want them to know? So I have a video here that's going to tell you what they put together themselves to let you know what they feel you needed to know about.
In 2008, over $473 million was used to fund Texas juvenile probation agencies.
In 2008, homicide felony referrals increased from 68 offenses to 95 offenses. In 2008, almost 100,000 teens were referred to juvenile probation departments.
50% of the crimes were misdemeanor.
51,623 teens were repeat offenders.
In 2008, 547 10-year-olds were referred to the Juvenile Probation Department. From 10 to 11, that number more than doubles to 1,375 cases. From 11 to 12, that number doubles again to 3,342 cases. This number continues to increase to 24,027 cases at 16. In the Wichita County, there are 12,775 teens. 661 of those were referred to the Juvenile Probation Department. Of those, 75 were defined as violent felony offenses.
Juvenile populations in Texas is 49% female and 51% male. Juvenile referrals were 27% female and 73% male.
There are more than 80 teen courts in Texas and over 1,000 in the U.S.
Wichita County Teen Court holds over 300 trials a year.
Cases heard in teen court are Class C misdemeanors.
Over 85% of the youth finish all the teen court requirements.
Since inception, June 1st, 1997 to June 30th, 2009, the teen court program has offered services to 3,371 youths as defendants and over 1,200 as volunteers.
When a youth finishes teen court, the case will be dismissed.
Out of all the teens that finish the requirements for the teen court, less than 8% get in their ticket.
54 nonprofit agencies received community service from the teen court program.
In 2008, 84 youth participated in volunteer legal training. Between 2008 and 2009, the Wichita County Junior Bar Association conducted 8 fundraisers, raising $3,500 for the junior bar activities.
I am teen court.
I am teen court.
I am teen court.
I am teen court.
So this is what they felt like you needed to know. It was a little bit difficult to hear it all, but the main thing that I wanted you to see is that we have an increasing number of teen offenders in our communities and in our state, many of them 10 years old. I mean, when you're looking at this and look at the numbers, I presented it with all types of data. They wanted data, and I presented it with all types of materials. And what jumped out at all of this young man here was the fact that there were so many 10-year-olds cited in the state of Texas. And it jumped exponentially all the way up to 16, 17, and 18. He zoned in on those numbers specifically. But then also, the things that they wanted you to understand is, what I like about the way they created the video is they took you from the very negative to the very positive. They said how many, 54 different agencies received community service through the Wichita County Teen Court Program. We provide almost 10,000 hours a year of community service to our agencies that we partner with. So it's a growing number, it's an increasing number on both ends of the spectrum, both the offenders, but also it's growing in number of what we're providing with the community. To give you a little bit of history, as you see in 94, there were 78 programs nationwide. This is documented through the National Youth Court Center and through the National Association of Youth Courts. The National Youth Court Center is an agency that was administered through the American Probation and Parole Association. They were provided a lot of funding through the National Highway Traffic Safety and some other agencies, and they were a clearinghouse for us. Well, when funding started dropping off, that's when the National Association of Youth Courts was developed. Around 2005, we started working on this program, and now it's up and running with its own website and everything, but that's where most of this data came from. In 2004, you can see how it jumped to 972 programs, so you had, you know, almost 10 times the number. We only have 2009 data. 2010 has been collected, but it hasn't been published before I created all of this, so that's why you still have some old data. There's still around 1,200 programs, even with the economy the way it's dropped off. It's kind of a fluid association, and some of them will drop off. We'll have other communities that are starting up. In Texas, we're still running around 50 active teen courts that are members of our Teen Court Association of Texas, which we're still about 80 active teen courts. And to give you an idea, they vary in size from courts that meet once a month in communities as small as 2,000 people to Fort Worth that will have 3,500 cases this year. So it's one of those programs that you can tailor to meet your needs. The governing statutes, you have the Chapter 45 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, and that ties in with 54 of the Texas Family Code. At one time, teen court was authorized in these two separate places. However, they weren't consistent with each other. So about 4 years ago, the legislature went in and made them consistent where they both read similarly as far as what you can do with teen court. Basically, you have 180 days from the time a kid signs up with teen court to get them out of the program. It also states that they can only return to the program once every 2 years for a same type offense. If you have a similar offense, it's up to your individual court if you allow them through. Policy in Wichita Falls is no, you come once every 2 years. But those are the two that specifically define the teen court program. Then you have the Texas Government Code that will allow for the...
They said they heard him. Okay. That will... Ooh. That will allow for the $20 fee to be collected. Now, the $20 fee can work in several different ways as well. 10 of it can go to your court to help administer some of your or help offset some of your administrative costs, but then the other 10 can be kept by your city. In our city, and I'll explain how we're funded, it'll make a little bit more sense, but in our city, the full 20 comes back to our teen court program. None of it stays with the city. I am not a part of the city, and that's where it'll make sense when we get to talking about it. Also, the Code of Criminal Procedure has the Graffiti Eradication Fund. The name has changed to a Juvenile Justice Diversionary Fund. This started out as a great idea. It was going to be a wonderful funding resource for us, but it died. The way it worked out is for every graffiti conviction, $5 goes into a fund that can be used to fund teen court, but there's also a laundry list of other agencies that can receive benefits from this, such as your juvenile probation department, your parks and rec department. So you can see in most cities where this money would be funneled into a different area, it's not going to be very beneficial, but it does set up authorization for the teen court program and for monies to be funded that way. The process. You know your basic process where the youth must appear with a parent or legal guardian and they must plead guilty or no contest or not guilty in your court or plead innocent. Well, if they want to utilize the teen court program, they must plead guilty or no contest. We do not determine guilt or innocence. In some states they do, but in Texas you're not authorized to determine guilt or innocence. You're only authorized to determine what the sentence will be for that offense. So it's important that they plead one of these ways. That's where it differs then. You know, in your court, if the youth pleads guilty or no contest, sometimes the judge will put them on some community service, and then as you just heard, there's some other offers as far as the tutoring and different deferred programs. Prior to that, there wasn't very many other options you could do with a youth if they pled guilty. They paid the fine, some type of deferred, but then also if they went through the teen court program. In the teen court program, that's where I take over. This is where it gets really interesting to me. We have a process where once they sign up for the teen court program, we set them for an interview. Our court's small enough that we are able to have a face-to-face interview with every defendant. I have a part-time assistant that works for me that we're trying to work into full-time. So between two staff, we're going to have a face-to-face interview with at least 300 kids a year. At that interview, we get all the pertinent information about the youth, the offense, their hobbies, responsibilities, anything like that. Everything that you would need to know to put together a good prosecution case or a defense case for a sentencing hearing. This is compiled into case notes, which are distributed to the teen attorneys that handle the cases. We also, at that time, will get all of the signed forms from the parents, consent releases, anything that we're going to need to make sure that that kid is successful in the program and that we've covered every base as far as liability. If they go to their trial, they're sentenced to community service, they're sentenced to jury duty, they may be sentenced to letters of apology, essays, research papers, creative sentencing. This is what I love about our program. Had a girl come in one day. She was there for disruption of class, and understand that we have no input over what the charge is. When we get them as just as the ticket's written. A girl threw scissors at a boy, hit him in the head, and poked a hole up near his eye. She was charged with disorderly conduct, disruption of class. She was not charged with any type of assault or anything. So when the jury heard her case, and with the attorneys that were handling her case, somewhere it became a creative process where the jury came back and says that she needed to go through class blindfolded to see what it had been like had she put this young man's eye out. The teacher took it one step further. Not only did she go through class blindfolded, but she also had to prepare an essay for the teacher that the teacher graded and had to approve before she received credit for being blindfolded in that class that day. So it really turned out to be quite an educational process for her, but I was really happy that the jury took it that extra step. Another creative sentence that we had is that we had a jury one time. It was a minor possession of alcohol case. There was questions of disruptive, disorderly behavior while driving. There was some interaction between two cars, and one of the cars, with the beauty of the cell phone, calls the police and talks to the police as the young men are driving down the road, flashing their beer cans and flashed a weapon at the other car. So at the trial, when we had the young man on the stand, he was very cavalier about his alcohol. He had drank before, drank after, probably wasn't going to quit drinking. And so the jury sentenced him to have to attend AA meetings. He had to attend a series of AA meetings. What's interesting is at the exit interview, when I was explaining what his sentence was, that he was going to have to go to AA, that, you know, there are certain meetings or certain rules and procedures, mother turns around and says, "That's okay, I'll take him to mine." So you can see how sometimes the juries gather insight into the youth that we may not have seen. They pick up on cues that we may have missed, but then they turn around and sentence the youth to those cues. It's my job to jump through every hoop necessary to make sure they can complete that sentence. We've gone out and cleaned parks. We've cleaned specific parks because it can't be for an individual. So we've cleaned the park in front of a school teacher's house that got sporked. We've done special projects, different things like that. But anything that it takes to make sure that this youth learns the lesson the jury intends for them to learn. And I've been very fortunate in that I haven't seen any jury that sentenced a young man to anything that was, or a young woman, to anything that was what I consider more punitive than educational. Something they haven't given them any ugly sentences, to put it in lack of better terms. They haven't sentenced them to do something just to be mean, just to be bullying, just to be vengeful. They've all been pretty well educational, and I love it when you sit in there and you'll have these kids and they'll be real quiet in the beginning, and finally one of them will step up and say, "I just didn't like her attitude." And all of a sudden, everybody chimes in. "She didn't take this seriously. She's not sorry. She didn't do this. She didn't do that." And the next thing you know, they're going through trying to come up with the creative sentence that's going to leave an impression upon this young person. So it is interesting in that aspect. Back to the process. At this trial, they get their jury sentence. They have 90 days from the night they're sentenced to complete all of their jury requirements. It's a pass or fail program. You do 100%. Or you get 0% credit. It's great that you did 40 hours community service. We appreciated your 4 jury terms, but that essay was due. You didn't do the essay, therefore you didn't complete 100% of the sentence requirements, and it's all for nothing. You got to go back and pay the fine. There's very few kids we have to do that with, but when you do, sometimes you're not quite very remorseful about having to impose the original fine because they just sometimes don't seem to take it very seriously, and that's why we have some of them like we do. But anyway, if they are successful with the program, citation's dismissed, they move forward with blessings, and we tell them thank you very much and wish you best of luck in the future. Sometimes we do have some of the defendants that will come back in the program as volunteers. Some of them do want to come back in and contribute after that. Most of them, we won't see them again. But that's good because we don't see them as reoffenses either. Less than 8%, like you heard in the video, less than 8% of the offenses that come through the teen court program that are successful in the teen court program commit another offense. We track them in various different ways, but less than 10% will go on into the juvenile system even. So it's a very successful program. There's four basic models. You have the adult judge model, which is what we utilize in our court. This is where you have an adult attorney or community member who is well-versed in the law that will come in and sit as the judge over your proceedings. This is the only adult involved in your proceedings. Everybody else that's involved will be the teens, the defendants, the attorneys, unless they call parents or other adults to testify. And we have had them call police officers to testify. We've had school teachers testify. We've had parents testify, siblings, different people like that. Then you have the youth judge model. This is not one that's used very much in Texas for what I would consider obvious reasons. This is where you take one of your senior volunteers and have them sit as the judge. And the reason why I say to me what is fairly obvious is even though they have been trained in teen court, they are trained in some of the objections and different things like that. Our volunteers are reaching a level of education from the people that do the training that I don't know that a senior volunteer could necessarily give an adequate call on something as far as some of the different things that they call the objections on. The judge is only there for process. They don't put any of their own opinions into it. They don't put any of their own feelings into it other than through the objections. So this is why I say that we don't use the senior judge model very often. It would be a bit challenging for a senior youth. You have the tribunal model. This is where you have three senior volunteers that sit as judges without a jury. This is another one that's not used very much here in Texas because we have enough jury members. We've been in the position where all of our courts have functioned with enough jury members that we haven't had to use the tribunal model. It's used a lot in Alaska, New York, and some of the places back east. Lastly, and this is one we use, is the peer jury model. This is great. We use it for all our traffic. We handle traffic in our court. Some courts don't handle traffic. In teen court, you tailor it to your needs. Again, it's whatever works for you. We had a young man that came through one time, 75 and a 65, on a motorcycle, wearing a helmet, with a license, proper clothes, doing everything by the book, just speeding. Nothing but speeding. He came into our traditional courtroom, regular trial, prosecution defense, and his jury sentenced him to the maximum hours of community service for this offense. They sentenced him to the maximum jury duties for his offense. They sentenced him to an emergency room tour for his offense. He had to do victim impact panel, which is something targeted towards alcohol. And he had a couple of other things he had to do. And I kept looking at this case, and I couldn't find the key as to why this young man was sentenced so, what I consider harshly, for a speeding offense. About the third time, he was cool with it. He was fine. He says, I'll do it. It's going to get it off my record. I'm going into the Navy. Let's do this. But I kept looking, and finally I realized nobody on his jury had been through defensive driving, driver's education, or had a driver's license. None of them had been behind the wheel of a car. Therefore, 75 is a huge number. It's very fast. He's on a motorcycle. So when I kind of quizzed them later on as they were coming back for jury duties, that was their focus, was the fact he was going so fast, not the fact that it was only 10 miles over the limit. So what we do now is we take licensed drivers. You must have completed driver's education. You may not have your traditional license yet. You may just have a permit, but you must have completed driver's education. And they sit in a jury format, like grand jury. We usually have five of them in a room. And the defendant goes in and sits, and they directly question the defendant. Defendant directly answers them to where if there's anything left on the table, the defendant has the opportunity to speak up on their own behalf, but they do not have an advocate in the room for them. If parents are going to testify, they have to be sworn in just like the defendant. But this way, we have more control over our traffic cases in that drivers are judging drivers. I don't have non-drivers judging drivers. So that's why we utilize this. So we use the adult judge model and the peer jury model at our court. Does anybody have any questions at this point? Is anybody confused about any of it at this point? Because I promise you by the end, I think it'll all come together. Okay? Community service partners and projects. Most any community, even if it's a community that has just a volunteer fire department, has an opportunity for community service. But fire trucks have to be cleaned, fire stations have to be swept, Hoses have to be rolled. I know the most of the volunteer firemen do that, but if you need a kid, if you need a hose ran 200 feet down that way so we can roll it upright, what better yet than to have a kid run it 200 feet down that way? That way it saves you the time and the effort. There's also fundraisers, there's school projects, there's different things that can be tailored to a community service project. One of the things that we had that's a biggie is our local Optimist Club has a Christmas tree lot every year. They sell Christmas trees. That's their fundraiser. They get in about 7,500 Christmas trees, and within 25 days' time, they'll go through all of them. We live in a community of 100,000 people, so that's a lot of Christmas trees that are going into these houses. So what our kids do, who has to be out there picking up the branches and the needles that falls off? Who has to be out there making sure that all the trash is picked up? Who has to be out there making sure hay is out there where it's got muddy? Not that it's muddy out there the last couple of years, but we've had times when I've driven by the tree lot on a Sunday or a Saturday afternoon and seen the kids out there working in drizzling snow. I mean, we don't get snow like most people. Y'all know we're down here. We're not in Minnesota or somewhere. But yeah, it's out there snowing. It's about 32 degrees, 30 degrees, and they're out there just happy working. So I know that this is one that they fairly well enjoy. But the beauty of this particular project is because it's the Optimist Club, they're working with local businessmen. The Optimist Club has all of their members that take shifts at the tree lot. So you may not have the same Optimist member there more than three shifts over that 25-day period of time. These are teenagers that may not have had opportunities to meet a business owner. They haven't met the local State Farm agent. They haven't met the guy that works down here at the newspaper. They haven't met the guy that works over here for the oil company. They don't know these people. And once they make a communication or make a connection with these people, they learn that, number one, I can talk to this man. It's not difficult to talk to an adult. You can communicate with an adult. But we have them come back and they'll say, "Miss, he gave me his business card. He said if I need a job, I need a job reference, he gave me his business card." Most times they've never even seen a business card. Many of their parents may not have business cards, and if they do, they may not want their children out passing out their business cards. So they start putting together those networks and those connections in the community that's going to help them when they do go to work at United or when they do need to get a job for a summer or something like that. Also, it's good for us in that the Optimist Club pays for our appreciation our appreciation banquet each year at the end of the year for the volunteers. So it's a win-win situation for both. We're an agency that they support. Our kids support their agency. Rotary Club's the same way. I just went to a Rotary Club luncheon the other day where they awarded us some money to help fund our in-school teen court program that we're developing. We're going to have a teen court program that's going to use the panel jury model. It's going to be in the schools, in the individual school, with cases that are not necessarily serious enough to receive a ticket, but it's the running in the hallway, it's the tardies, it's the truancies, it's the things like that that aren't to a level that they're ready to be a criminal offense. We're going to deal with those at the school, in the school, with them doing work with the janitor, with them doing work with teachers, with them working on projects, papers, grades, things like that. So the Rotary Club just helped us as far as they're paying for all of our paper for the next year, that's for sure. Another one is the Area Food Bank. If you don't have a food bank, I'm sure you have a church or somebody that does gather food for those in need. And what we do is certain times of the year, we'll do a food drive, and I'll let the kids, I've had somebody say, "You let them buy hours?" Well, I don't necessarily consider it buying hours, but yeah, they buy hours. You bring me in so many canned good items. You bring me in things off of a list. I want the receipt from the store where you bought it. I also need a one-page written paper for why you chose the items you chose, who you think is going to benefit from those items, and how you felt giving up money you earned to buy these items. We also do this with the community partners that we have, Rainbow House, that has the resources for foster parents when they take CPS placements. And one of the big lessons that they learn there, and the reason why we do an essay, I had a little boy come in one day and he had a green giant gold can of asparagus in his bag for the food bank. And he was about 12 years old, and I looked at him and I said, "Thomas, where'd you buy this asparagus?" And he couldn't say asparagus, but he says, "King's Food." I said, "Really?" I said, "You bought it with your own money?" "Yes, ma'am." I said, "How much did you pay for that?" "89 cents. I said, you better take your granny's asparagus back. She's going to be mad when she knows you took it. Because if you're familiar with it, it's usually $2.89 for a can of asparagus. So that told me right there he'd been in granny's pantry. So that's why they have to do the paper. But another one, like with the Rainbow House. First time we did a supplies drive for Rainbow House, they needed diapers, of course. And they usually need toiletry things, baby toiletry items, and they need like the little combs and clippers and stuff. And everybody brought in newborn diapers. Everybody brought in newborn stuff. And I had to explain to all of these kids that it's great, but it's probably not going to be used. Because when a parent abuses a child, it's not the newborn, it's the toddler. It's the one that's old enough to cry and cry and cry. And it's the old enough to need comfort from a parent that just doesn't have comfort to give. So that was an eye-opening experience for our kids when we tell them, you know, thanks for the newborn, but no, we need the 2-year-old. We need the 18-month-old stuff because those are the ones that get brought in the middle of the night. It's not the babies. But another one, our Armed Forces Centers, this is kind of a win-win for them. The National Guard or the Reserve agencies, as well as the recruiting officers, the kids can go in and work with them. And in return, while they're having to do all these things of stuff in envelopes or stuff, they get the education of what is going into the envelopes, why we're sending these materials out, why we have all of these things in there. And so the recruiters get a chance to kind of put a bug in their ear. And some of the kids do go on into the military service, so they will sign up. So that's a win for them. Boys and Girls Clubs is a given. You can understand how they would benefit, obviously, because they have somebody there to help clean their facilities. The YMCA communities and schools, I don't know, do any of you have communities and schools? Are you familiar with what this is? Communities and schools is a fairly new thing in Texas, and I'm hoping it survives this education cut. These are people that go into the school district. Ours right now in Wichita Falls are with our school district. They weren't before. And their goal is to provide projects and programs in the school that keep the at-risk kids engaged. And it's not the kids that are at risk of criminal behavior. It's the kids that they're there, but they're not engaged in school. They're not interested in school. One of the little girls that we picked up through the communities and schools is from Nigeria. There's the huge language and cultural barrier there for her. So she was a client of the communities and schools to learn how to, well, she had never had a birthday party. Her social life was so different from what the kids were there in schools. And so this is an agency that helps her, and in return, we work with them, and then we do some projects for them as far as paperwork, after-school programs, different things like that. So again, with your partners, this is a key part of any program, too, in that the biggest thing that you're looking for when you're looking at funding, when you're looking at validation, when you're looking at any kind of accreditation for your program, they're going to want to know who you partner with. And I'll tell you right now that in our Teen Court program, besides our community service partners, we have at least 14 other agencies that we partner with for other parts of our program. I even got a phone call the other day from it's not the Teen Pregnancy Center anymore because they don't go into pregnancy homes anymore, but they work with teens to help teach them and educate them on pregnancies to prevent teen pregnancies. And they're wanting to come in and even work, find a way that they can tie in with our Teen Court program. So there's all kinds of partnerships available. The benefits community service, the benefits is, I mean, this is obvious, the community service, but the civil involvement through the jury duty. I had a young lady that came in that served as a juror. She did her time. She did her ticket and everything. We got everything all taken care of. I think it was even a traffic. But I ran into her a couple of years later in the courthouse, and she was there on an adult jury. She was there for a criminal case. And so I waited till it was over. She told me what she was there for, and she started to try to tell me. I said, don't talk to me now. I want to talk to you when you finish. So she came to me at the end of the week when they had finished their case. It was a DWI case. And I asked her, I said, so what did you think? And the very first thing she started talking about was the contrast between her teen jury and the adult jury that she served on. The teen jury was more effective in their deliberations. They were more focused in their deliberations. And they got to the point much quicker than the adult jury did. She found it a very frustrating process. So at least I know that that works as far as gaining the civic involvement and learning your process there. The education to youth and defendant. Our volunteers, our Junior Bar Association is receiving education that could never be duplicated. We go to a mock trial competition at Texas Wesleyan Law School. It's open to courts from around the state. Anybody can come in and participate. There's like a $150 registration fee. We spend the day at the law school there. They partner with law students, and we go through the whole process of the mock trial. But prior to that, all of the different courts have people that come in and help with their training. The Texas Young Lawyers Association is pretty strong here, and they provide a lot of the training for some of the kids. But we have an Air Force base in Wichita Falls, Shepherd Air Force Base. They have a JAG department out there that has about six JAG in it, and then their criminal defense section has about four officers in it. And we've been fortunate that we've always had an officer from the base come and work with our team. But this last year, we had an officer that got stationed at Shepherd. They usually only stay 2 or 3 years, so we have to grab them while they're there. That is a Harvard undergrad, Pepperdine Law graduate that has come in with our kids and challenged them and tested them and educated them at a level that I don't think anybody else in my community would have the patience to do. He copies off sections of his law books, of his law manuals, and brings them in and grills these kids and works with these kids, and they show back up. He sends them home with homework on a Thursday night. They show back up the next Thursday night, having done the homework, having learned from that section, and they're ready to do the next. This is a volunteer program. They don't have to be here. There's nobody saying, you must come to teen court and volunteer. You must be here to help this case. You must be here to do this mock trial. They're choosing to come back, so I know that they're finding value in it. They're getting the positive role models and the mentors. Again, like I said, the kids doing community service with the Optimist Club. They're meeting businessmen. They're meeting their community. They're learning what's in their community, and they're gaining an education from it. The positive workforce. I met a young man, what is today, Tuesday, Sunday. I'm in Sears with my husband. You remember Joey? Yeah, okay, I remember Joey. I have no clue who Joey is. Joey's a 19-year-old kid that worked for him. He works at a GM dealership, GM Dodge dealership. Kid worked in the automotive part with him out in the service department. And he said, you know, Joey's a great kid. He just doesn't know how to work. So, okay, I'm sure I know what you mean, but let's get a little bit more out of this. What do you mean Joey doesn't know how to work? Joey does an excellent job. When you tell him to take that red Chevy over there, go up the hill, run it through the car wash, bring it back down here, wipe it off, and park it over here and have it ready for pickup, Joey will do exactly that. What Joey won't do is come back to you and say, do you have another one you need that done for? Do you have another car you need ran through the car wash? Joey doesn't know how to find the next project. Joey didn't see that, okay, I took this red one up there, and I know it needs to be clean, but I know he just finished with that one and pulled it out. I could see that it's got the completed ticket in the window. Joey doesn't ask, should I take that one next? He doesn't know how to work. He doesn't have the work ethic. So this is something that they're learning. We're creating a positive workforce, because when they go out and do community service, everybody laughs at me and says, yeah, tell them to bend over and pick up that piece of paper. Well, it's not bend up that piece of paper. Look at the other pieces of paper beside it. Find what else needs to be done. We know that because we've all learned it at one time or another. Most 15 and 16-year-old kids don't know that, and this is one of the places where they can figure that out. Reduce recidivism. I told you earlier, less than 10% will receive another ticket in our program. That's the data that we have throughout the state. It's pretty much about the same thing. There's an 8% recidivism rate nationally. We track them an extra step. We take all kids that come into the program, complete the program, and will still be a juvenile for 2 more years. So I track them for a full 2 years out of the program to see if they go on into the juvenile system. And we have less than 10%. We've had it as low as 5%, but at least less than 10% each year over a 2-year period of time will go into the juvenile system. When I first started working with teenagers back in 1992, somebody told me that if 9 out of every 14 reoffend, that's a great recidivism rate. Okay, that's not even 50%. If 9 out of 14 reoffend, then you're doing a good job. I think we're doing a much better job. I think all of us are doing a better job. Funding sources. If your city chooses not to 100% fund your program, you still have many, many options. The Junior League. The Junior League in Fort Worth helped get their program started. It started out as a niche program. It's still kind of a niche program, even at 3,500 cases. But the Junior League comes in and provides them with the training for the volunteers. They also feed their volunteers. They provide them with the appreciation stuff for their volunteers, different banquets, scholarships, everything they can to take care of the volunteers of their program. School districts, Midland helps fund their program. I think they get funding from the city of Midland and from the school district in Midland. Service clubs, again, I told you Rotary Club, Optimist Club, Lions Club, any of those will help. The city county government, obviously, and in some courts, the city and county blend funds to help pay for the program. Private foundations, we've been blessed in Wichita Falls that we have some foundations that help fund our program each year. We've reached a point where we had 7 weeks worth of operating expenses. When Teen Court came to Wichita Falls in 1997, the city didn't think it was a viable program. The city manager felt like it was going to cost the city money because kids are working off these fines. They're not paying them. So in his mind, there was $35,000 a year income that wasn't going to happen. The county had a juvenile probation department that was heavy on the end of serious offenders. They didn't do diversionary and they didn't do first offender programming. They just didn't, and that wasn't an area they wanted to get into. So our Boys and Girls Club stepped up with the Junior League. Junior League said, we'll give you the money. Boys and Girls Club said, we will administer the program. So they stepped up, and I am a Boys and Girls Club administered program. I am an employee of the Wichita County Teen Court. Because it has county in my name, some people consider me a county employee. Because I get referrals from city, I'm eligible to participate in things such as this, some of the municipal court education things. But I don't really belong to anybody. I'm kind of like literally the redheaded stepchild over here. But we have to come up with our own budget every year. I go to the city for outside agency funding every year. They do not fund my program. I told you about the $20 fee. 10 goes to city, 10 goes to teen court in most cases. The full 20 comes to my court. I get an additional $325 a year, or $3,250 a year from my city to help fund my program in addition to the 10 that we would already get. That's the funding we get from there. Our county government provides me with a courtroom. I have my own courtroom. It's about half the size of this. We have judges' benches that Job Corps built. We have chairs kind of like this that are zip-tied together to form our rows. It's impressive for a small courtroom, and even some of the other judges have kind of whined that Teen Court has their own courtroom and nothing else happens in there. I said, well, come on a Teen Court night and you'll see something happening. But they also provide me with outside agency funding. I go in every year and ask for funds from our county, and they do provide some of the funding. But we have some private foundations that have also funded the program along the way. So like I said, we got to the point where we had 7 weeks funding, period. I had all kinds of grants pending. I had funding requests out everywhere, but we just didn't have any guaranteed funding. We still, after 13, 14 years, do not have one source of funding that looks at us and says, every year I will give you money. I do not have one guaranteed source of funding whatsoever, but every year somebody has taken and picked up the ball, and we've never gone at any point where we've had to suspend programming for lack of funding. So it can happen. And again, partnering with the nonprofits, that's very important, is that you partner with whatever nonprofits you have in your area. Data collection, recidivism defines. You have to decide how you want to define recidivism. When I first came into this position, there wasn't a very strong relationship with the city, so I couldn't go in and see how many kids got a new ticket. So I defined recidivism as those who went into the juvenile system. That's where that came in. Since then, we have a new city clerk, municipal court clerk, that shares data with me, and we can go in and I have to manually go in and figure out how many of them got a new ticket, because these are the kids that came through your program. These are the kids that got a new ticket. So that's kind of how it goes, but it works. We figure it out. Cultural diversity is something that you have to watch for any kind of monies, even from your city. They're going to want to know how it's spent, where it goes. Poverty is important because that can help you with some of your block grant things, different stuff like that. And then school data. For some reason, teen court programs are linked with school system programs, so they want to know, are they passing, are they failing, how are they doing? So that's another one that you need to look at. A lot of the data is available on a local level. Some of the data is available on a national level, but right now there isn't any state data available. This is a little bit lengthy, but it's something that I hope that you can figure it out and see the impact of the teen court program. When you look at this, this is national, even though it's California. You have over 1 million kids going in the juvenile system each year. Cost per youth, $23,000. This is running pretty well true to form. This is your total cost, $25 billion a year spent on juveniles, just juveniles. With the teen court program, this was based upon surveys done. We had the 125,000, 450 costs per youth. I'll tell you that this is pretty close. In our court, it's $1.78 a day supervision. We've broken it down to per day per defendant. We don't even do a cost of supervision on the volunteers. So you can see there it's only $56 million, but total combined, you're almost $26 billion to supervise juveniles in our country. Looking at the cost savings with the teen court program, you can see that it's quite a difference. It's really substantial from where I view things. And then in your recidivism rate, you have the 8% recidivism, where in your traditional criminal justice is 18%, and I'm guessing that's probably a lot higher. I'll buy their 18%, but I'm guessing it's probably a lot higher. So you have this in there. I just wanted to give you an idea of one of the pieces of data that can be used when you go into a city council or when you go into your community leaders and ask them about the interest of such of a program. Lastly, TACO. I was at a meeting. I go to any training I can get my hands on. Anytime anybody says we're going to train nonprofits or teen courts or anything, I'll show up. And I was at one, and the lady said, okay, you know when the little kid leaves home and they pick up their knapsack and they put everything important in them, they put their peanut butter sandwich in it, they put their favorite teddy bear or their baseball or whatever in it, they put all this in their little knapsack, they put it on a stick, throw it over their shoulder, and they run away from home. She asked each of us at our table to pick one thing that exemplified our program, put that in the knapsack for our table, and we're going to run away from home. And I picked TACO because you saw some of these faces in the video. Well, one of these faces in here is a daughter of first-generation American. Her parents are from Mexico, straight from Mexico. They've recently gotten their citizenship. The family business, they have taco wagons. They have two taco wagons. Bernice, as I was taught to say it, her and her sister had to work the family business. And, of course, what better place to have a taco wagon on the weekend than down by the bars? Let's face it, drunks want to eat. So Bernice and her sister, when she was 16 years old, had the 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. shift on Friday night and Saturday nights. This young lady went to school Monday through Friday, kept her grades up. She came to me twice. First time, she was in junior high, is a disorderly conduct fighting. I will not lie to you. The girl has a very outrageous personality, and if somebody says something wrong, she's going to correct them on it. So, yes, I did have her for that. But the second time she came in the door, and before I even said anything, she says, Miss, I was speeding. I was just speeding. Okay, I'm just speeding. So, okay, I got you, Bernice, I got you. But when she finished, she said, I got to do this. I can do this. I can do like any one of those kids up there. I got this. Let me do this. Sure, I'll take a volunteer, you know. I'm not going to turn anybody away. This is Bernice with her peers who I have a doctor's child. I have a business owner's child. I have a young lady that's at Boston College. I have two young men in the military. And I'm not going to point out which one's which. You just know they're there, okay? And Bernice is right there in the middle with them, so she's my taco. I got a text from Bernice a few weeks ago. Miss, I need money. I need money. I'm going to Texas Tech in August. She's been admitted. She's got her funding together, and she'll be a Texas Tech student starting in August. So to me, this exemplifies why we do what we do. Why we have programs like this in our community. Does anybody have any questions? Concerns? Comments? One of the things that I got a couple of minutes, I'll tell you that it doesn't matter the size of your community. You can tailor a teen court program to fit your community. There was a community in, I believe it was Oregon, less than 5,000 people in the community, one high school, everybody knew everybody. Their teen court program met once a month. It met at the school. They had a cooperation with the school district. And what was great was they did the panel jury. You know, I told you master jury, where you put together the volunteers and they asked questions of the defendant. Defendant answered them. But when the defendant completed all their sentence requirements or not, they went back before the same panel. So when the example that they used is when the girl came in and says, my mom had a wreck, so I couldn't get to community service, and I didn't have time to do this and that. When she came up with all their excuses, they knew her. They had the counter. Your mom had a wreck, but she just bent the front end of her truck. That doesn't mean that she still couldn't get you to community service. You signed up at the volunteer fire department that's 6 blocks from your house. You could have walked. So the way they explained that, yes, we do all know each other. No, it's not anonymous. Yes, we all know everybody's history and past. What's kept in teen court is just like Las Vegas. It's kept in teen court. It's kept confidential. But they still could hold each other accountable, and they still can make it work in a very small community. Also, some of the other teen courts, if they have like 3 or 4 small communities, they'll work kind of as a co-op to where we'll meet in this one this week, this one this week, and this one the next week. Even in some of the larger suburban areas, they do that. So if you have an interest in the teen court program, there is a way that you can tailor it to fit any of your community needs. Some of them don't handle alcohol. Some of them don't handle traffic. Some of them handle only traffic. So you can choose the way you want it to be. This is my email address. You have my contact information. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. I have packets like this at the back of the room. This packet has every piece of paperwork that we go through in our program. And it has a guide that tells you if it's a municipal court-generated document, a T-court-generated document, or exactly where it comes from. So you have all of our paperwork. You can plagiarize any of it that you choose to. You can copy any of it that you choose to. And I have all of this in electronic format except for municipal courts paperwork. That's something that they could probably provide you with, but I don't have that in electronic format. Everything else we do have in electronic format. Okay? Thank you.